MyAudiobooks.ai presents The Billion Person Experiment, what the GLP-1 era is about to teach us. Sometime in the next few years, if current trends hold, more people will be taking glucagon-like peptide 1 receptor agonists, the drug class the world knows as Ozempic, Wegovy, and Mounjaro, than have ever taken any single class of medication in human history. The World Health Organization has now made that future semi-official. Its first-ever global guidelines on the drugs recommend them for the treatment of obesity, for a condition the organization counts at 1 billion people affected worldwide. 1 billion. If even a fraction of that number is eventually prescribed, the species is embarking on the largest unplanned pharmacological experiment it has ever run. Tens of millions of human bodies on a hormone-mimicking drug for years or decades, with the long-term measurement still catching up to the marketing. The journal Science, in a September 2026 analysis, named the moment precisely. The guidelines arrive amid competitive pressures among pharmaceutical companies, food companies vying for the GLP-1 market segment, and wellness companies building what is being billed as a GLP-1 lifestyle, a commercial environment, the authors wrote, ripe for unintended consequences that conspire against fair access. That phrase, unintended consequences, is the subject of this article. Because the first-order story of these drugs is now well-known and genuinely remarkable. They work, for weight loss, better than anything medicine has ever produced. The second-order story is only beginning to be written, and it is being written on the bodies of the people taking the drugs right now. What happens when a hormone that does far more than suppress appetite is given to a tenth of humanity? The honest answer is that we are finding out in real time. And the findings so far are a mix of the thrilling, the troubling, and the simply unknown. This is not an anti-drug article, and it will not become one. The same evidence base that raises the questions also contains some of the most impressive results in modern pharmacology. It is an article about the difference between a drug that works and a drug whose workings we fully understand. And about the 5 years it takes medicine to learn the difference, years the world has decided to spend taking the drug anyway. At myaudiobooks.ai, you can create your own audiobooks from prompts, turn your documents into audio, all with one subscription, and store your items in your own personal library. Start with what GLP-1 actually is, because the name has become a brand, while the biology stayed complicated. Glucagon-like peptide 1 is a hormone your own body makes, an incretin, the class of gut hormones released after eating that tell the pancreas to release insulin, slow the emptying of the stomach, and signal fullness to the brain. The drug versions are mimics, engineered molecules that activate the same receptor, far longer and far stronger than the natural pulse. The origin story is worth a sentence because it explains the potency. The first successful GLP-1 drug was developed from the venom of the Gila monster, a desert lizard whose version of the hormone lasts for hours, instead of the 2 minutes the human version survives in the bloodstream. Pharmacologists learned the trick from the lizard, and then improved on it, engineering molecules that last a week. The natural hormone is a whisper that fades almost immediately. The drug is the same sentence held at full volume for 7 days. For type 2 diabetes, that was the original point, better insulin control. The weight loss was first a side effect, then the main event, then a cultural phenomenon. And here is the detail that drives everything else in this article. The receptor these drugs activate is not located only in the pancreas and the gut. GLP-1 receptors are found in the heart, the kidneys, the bones, the lungs, the immune system, and extensively throughout the brain, in regions that govern reward, motivation, nausea, memory, and mood. A drug that hits one target in one organ is a scalpel. A drug that hits the same target in 20 organs is a weather system. The mimics were sold as scalpels. They are, biologically, weather systems. And the weather report is still being assembled. The first unexpected chapter of that report is being written in the reward system, and it is the hopeful one. Because GLP-1 receptors sit in the brain's reward circuitry, researchers began noticing that patients on the drugs reported losing interest in more than food, drinking less alcohol, quitting gambling, easing off nicotine, stopping compulsive shopping. What began as anecdote has become a research front. Trials and reviews now underway examine the drugs as treatments for alcohol use disorder, gambling disorder, and other compulsive behaviors. One recent review described the drugs as a potential biological bridge across comorbidities in behavioral health, the same molecule touching metabolism and compulsion at once. If that research holds, the obesity drugs will have accidentally discovered a new class of addiction medicine, something psychiatry has failed to produce for half a century. It is the kind of unintended consequence a pharmaceutical company dreams of. The second chapter is the musculoskeletal one, and it is the cautionary one. The weight these drugs take off is not all fat. Analyses of trial and clinical data have found that a substantial share of the weight lost on GLP-1 drugs is lean tissue, muscle, and to a lesser degree, bone. For a young, healthy person losing 20 kilograms, some muscle loss alongside fat is expected in any weight loss and manageable with protein and resistance training. For the population actually being prescribed these drugs at scale, older adults, people with metabolic disease, people whose muscle mass is their insurance against frailty, falls, and nursing homes, losing a significant fraction of lean mass is not a footnote. Sarcopenia, the clinical term for the loss of muscle mass and strength, is one of the strongest predictors of disability and death in the elderly. The worry now articulating itself across the medical literature is that the drugs may be trading one form of frailty for another in exactly the patients least able to afford the exchange. Researchers are not arguing the drugs should be withdrawn. They are arguing that a prescription for a GLP-1 should come attached to a protein target, a strength training plan, and a bone density conversation, and that almost nobody's prescription currently comes with any of those. The third chapter is the strangest, and it is where the science is moving fastest. GLP-1 is not just a gut hormone that drugs mimic. It is also made inside the brain itself, and nobody fully knows what it does there. In September 2026, a study in the journal General Psychiatry reported that elevated levels of the body's own GLP-1 in blood serum tract with Alzheimer's disease pathology, associated with neuroinflammation, with amyloid burden, with tau pathology, with brain atrophy and cognitive decline, across two independent patient cohorts. Read that carefully, because it cuts in an unnerving direction. The natural hormone, measured higher in Alzheimer's patients, marked the disease. And yet the same journal literature contains the opposite signal too. GLP-1 receptor agonists, the drugs, have shown neuroprotective effects in preclinical Alzheimer's models, and researchers have proposed them as candidate dementia treatments. Human trial results so far have been inconsistent and limited. So the current state of knowledge, stated plainly, is this: the same molecule is a biomarker of the disease in one reading and a treatment candidate for the disease in another. We do not yet know what GLP-1 signaling does to the aging brain over decades, and we are about to find out because tens of millions of people have just volunteered for the experiment. At myaudiobooks.ai, you can listen to this story and thousands of others that explore the hidden science and mechanics behind the headlines. The fourth chapter is not biological at all. It is the commercial one, and it may prove to be the most consequential. Consider who is actually holding the prescriptions. In the American market, the early adopters of these drugs skewed heavily toward the affluent, people who could pay out of pocket, or whose premium insurance covered the copay, or whose employer added the benefit as a talent perk. Obesity itself runs in the opposite direction. Its prevalence is highest in the poorest counties, the least insured populations, the communities where a $1,000 monthly medication is not a health decision, but a fantasy. Insurance coverage remains a patchwork. Public programs in many places will not pay for the drugs as weight loss treatment at all. So the first years of the GLP-1 era have produced a quiet sorting. The people with the least medical need getting the drug most easily, and the people with the most need reading about it. The WHO's Fair Access Framework is an attempt to write a different second chapter globally. It currently consists of an intention and a working group. The WHO guidelines, as the science analysis noted, pair the drug recommendation with a call for robust population-level policies against the root causes of obesity, the food environment. But the drug recommendation is the part with a business model, and the food environment recommendation is the part without one.
Around the genuine medicine, an entire economy has assembled in 5 years. Telehealth platforms prescribing the drugs after questionnaire-length evaluations, compounding pharmacies producing their own versions during shortages, supplement brands marketing GLP-1 support and GLP-1 booster products with no evidence at all, and a wellness industry reframing daily injectable medication as a lifestyle brand with subscription tiers. Much of this market runs on off-label use, prescribing an approved drug for an unapproved purpose, which is legal, common, and often good medicine, but which also means a substantial share of the people taking these drugs are taking them for conditions the trials never tested, in doses never studied, sourced from supply chains never inspected.
During the worst of the shortages, regulators effectively looked the other way while compounders filled the gap with versions that varied in salt form, purity, and dose accuracy. The brand name molecule is one of the most studied drugs in the world. The molecule in the gray market vial may share its name and little else. Meanwhile, the manufacturers are locked in a price and market war. The food industry is quietly reformulating and acquiring to protect its market share from appetite suppression itself. And the access question? These drugs cost hundreds to over $1,000 a month in the United States, and obesity concentrates in the populations least able to pay, has been left, in the WHO's own framing, to a fairness framework that does not yet exist.
The science author's warning was surgical. The commercial milieu conspires against fair access. The drug that could narrow the obesity gap could just as easily widen it, becoming one more thing that separates the health of the rich from the health of everyone else.
And the fifth chapter is the one nobody can write yet, the exit chapter. Almost every person who starts these drugs faces the same future: stay on them indefinitely or stop and regain. Trial data and clinical experience consistently show that discontinuation is followed by regain of much of the lost weight. The hormone mimic was holding a door, and the door swings back when the mimic leaves. Which means the billion-person experiment has a second, quieter dimension. It may also be a billion-person commitment, a permanent pharmaceutical subscription for a chronic condition, for life, at scale. The long-term safety database for continuous multi-decade use does not exist because the drugs have not existed long enough.
Pharmacovigilance, the discipline of watching for harm after a drug reaches the market, the slow, unglamorous surveillance that caught Vioxx's heart attacks and Fenfen's valve damage, operates on a lag measured in years. And the GLP-1 era is, by that clock, in its opening minutes. The regulators are watching. The signal collection is genuinely underway. But the honest timeline is that the definitive 10-year and 20-year safety readouts will be published by researchers who are currently in graduate school, about patients who are currently filling their first prescriptions. There is also an asymmetry built into that watching that deserves a paragraph of its own.
The trials that approved these drugs enrolled thousands of patients for a few years, enough to find common side effects, nowhere near enough to find rare ones. A side effect that strikes one patient in 10,000 becomes visible only when 1 million people take the drug. A side effect that takes a decade to develop becomes visible only a decade later. The population about to receive these drugs is older, sicker, and more diverse than any trial cohort ever assembled. The surveillance systems that exist to catch the rare signal, adverse event reporting databases, insurance claims registries, linked health records, are good at finding signals and notoriously bad at proving what caused them, because the people who take a drug for obesity are never identical to the people who do not.
The pharmacovigilance era for this class will be an era of statistical argument as much as biological fact.
The strongest case for mass prescribing, stated at full strength, deserves its due, because it is strong, and because the strongest case against this article's caution depends on it. Obesity is not a cosmetic condition. It is a driver of diabetes, heart failure, kidney disease, joint destruction, sleep apnea, several cancers, and early death at a scale that dwarfs any documented harm of the drugs themselves. The same drugs now raising questions have produced cardiovascular outcome benefits in major trials, fewer heart attacks and strokes in high-risk patients, results that most preventative medicines never achieve.
The landmark cardiovascular outcomes trial for semaglutide in patients with established heart disease and overweight found the drug reduced the composite of cardiovascular death, heart attack, and stroke by a fifth compared to placebo, the first time an anti-obesity medication has ever demonstrated that class of benefit. Statins took decades to earn that kind of evidence. The GLP-1 class earned it in its first decade of mass use. Whatever the second-order concerns turn out to be, they are being weighed against a first-order benefit that is no longer theoretical. The addiction findings may open an entire new therapeutic field.
The alternative to treating obesity with these drugs is not a world without risk. It is a world with the enormous, certain, daily harm of untreated obesity, against which the unknowns of the drugs must be weighed rather than their zero. And the musculoskeletal and access concerns are management problems, not verdicts. Arguments for better prescribing, not no prescribing. Every transformative drug in history, from insulin to statins to the pill, went through this exact passage: miracle, then measurement, then maturity. GLP-1s are simply doing it in public, at 10 times the speed, with 100 times the patience.
Three findings would disprove this article's cautionary frame, or confirm it, and each is already watchable. First, the addiction trials. If the reward system studies in alcohol and gambling disorders produce positive randomized results, the drugs become the first broad-spectrum anti-addiction agents in history, and the unintended consequences ledger flips decisively positive. Second, the lean mass question. If large comparative studies show that the muscle loss is modest and manageable with standard countermeasures, protein, resistance training, dose management, the sarcopenia worry becomes a footnote. If instead frailty signals appear in older cohorts at population scale, prescribing practice will have to change.
Third, the brain. If human trials of GLP-1 drugs for Alzheimer's prevention or progression show real benefit, the neuroprotective reading wins, and these become the first metabolic brain drugs. If long-term surveillance instead links use to the neuroinflammatory signal the biomarker study detected, the field faces a genuinely dark reversal. The answers are not in. The experiment is running. The data is coming either way.
It is worth saying what this article has not claimed. It has not claimed the drugs are dangerous, the documented harms are specific and manageable, and the documented benefits are large. It has not claimed they are safe for lifetime use at population scale. That data does not yet exist, and this article has said so, plainly, rather than pretending either answer. It has not told anyone to start or stop a medication. Those are decisions for a patient and a physician with the full picture. And it has not claimed the obesity crisis is a failure of willpower that drugs paper over. The WHO's own guidelines treat it as a disease of biology and environment, and so does this article.
Which returns to the number the WHO gave the world. 1 billion. Every previous mass prescription in history, antibiotics, statins, antidepressants, taught the same lesson in the same order. The drug works, then the drug's other effects emerge. Then medicine learns to prescribe it properly. And the learning takes a decade. The GLP-1 era will be no different, except in scale. The miracle chapter is written. The measurement chapter has just opened. And 1 billion people are the subjects of the study nobody designed, running right now in the bodies of the neighbors, the coworkers, and the family members of everyone listening. An experiment whose results will arrive whether or not anyone thought to ask the question.
At myaudiobooks.ai, you can create fiction, nonfiction, and turn your documents into audio, all stored in one place with a single subscription. Plus, get instant access to thousands of audiobooks and deep dive investigations. Learn more today at myaudiobooks.ai. This concludes the audiobook narration. Thank you for listening.